So last week we considered this statement. It's Yeshaya 1:21. It reads, "How is a city filled with enduring truth, Aman, that which is established and trustworthy, verifiable and reliable, confirming and building confidence in the relationship, unfailing throughout the duration of time, always nurturing and dependable, a pillar upholding and supporting the right doorway? How is the city filled with enduring truth become like a whore? The honest, fair, accurate, upright, and vindicating path to righteousness, Sadak, and the righteous means to justly resolve disputes, the Mishpat, had once dwelled in her, even through the darkest hours. But now, they are murderers."
That's an indictment.
Something profoundly changed in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is where Yahweh introduced the covenant, where he confirmed the covenant with Moshe and Yishak. It is where he fulfilled his promises with the dough to David and had his home built right up the hill from Dodes. It is where Yosha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim, creating the Mishpat, the means to justly resolve disputes. Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, and Shavuah, the promise of seven. All those things took place there. And what happened immediately thereafter? Well, the Romans came in, and in 70 AD, they not only tore down the temple, they murdered a whole bunch of Jews, and they looted the wealth of the temple and used it to fund the most despicable arena in human history.
Cool.
And the slaves they hauled out of Jerusalem built it.
Yeah,
I was chosen people. Now, you can't be more murderous and despicable than Rome and using the temple of Yahweh to build your Colosseum where man's, the worst of man, was on display.
And it is. There's nothing the Nazis did that can be more horrifying to me.
Yeah.
And when you read about that, I mean, you're sitting there eating your hot dogs and popcorn and you're drinking your beer watching this horror.
Horror. Whether it's animals tearing people apart because you've abused them, or gladiators fighting to the death, killing people, or the celebration of pagan gods. Everything that was Rome was despicable.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we've even gone a step farther and we've glorified it.
Of course. What do we name our capital? In fact, it's on Capitol Hill, right? Palpatine Hill was where the Roman government was. And the official body, the elected body of that government, wasn't it the Senate of Rome? We have a Senate too, don't we? What was the symbol of Rome? Wasn't it not the eagle?
Eagle.
Eagle.
Oh, what was the symbol? What's the symbol of the United States?
Eagle, of course.
The bomb, right?
Of course. All right. What kind of architecture do we have in our capital?
Mm-hmm. The big dome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're the modern incarnation of Rome. And then, of course, that wasn't enough. Hadrian then tells the Jews who are in Diaspora after 70 AD, and in 133, he tells them, "Hey, come, I've got this great plan. We'll go and we'll rebuild the temple, and we're going to rebuild this capital. Rome that was brought in the three legions to disperse you, we'll make it all right. Come back home."
Now, that's a precursor of what's about to happen.
Yeah, and exactly. And the Jews, not knowing their God, came back to Jerusalem.
Cool.
Yeah, and as soon as they came back, there's a couple of details that I omitted, my little ruse. We're going to build this the city, as a spa for Roman legions. We're going to rename the city after myself, no longer be Jerusalem. And the temple we're going to build on top is going to be a shrine to me, right next to one to Jupiter. So Jupiter will have his, and then right next to it we'll have a shrine to me. I like them apples. At which Rabbi Akiva decided that he would elevate a warlord, Bar Kokhba, call him the Messiah, and kill any Jew that wasn't willing to back up that claim, went to war against Rome, and Rome brought in its legions and annihilated the Jewish people, renamed the land, salted the earth, raised the city.
They may be God's children by birthright, but when you abandon God's Torah, he ain't going to be there to protect you.
That's exactly what he
said, this is the deal. You lose my protection.
Yes, correct, and they did. He said, I raised you as my children, and then you rejected me. And then you replaced that relationship with a despicable religion. And so that is what happened to Jerusalem. And if you look at it now, it was then thereafter taken over by Rome, what little was left. The Byzantines then, when Constantine's mother, Constantine never converted to Christianity, but his mommy did. She went to Jerusalem and built shrines over all of the various sites. And then you look at that regime, and it'd be hard to find a more murderous regime than Roman Catholicism, particularly during the time of Constantine, Theodosius, and really for better part of 1,500 years thereafter.
They had the world's biggest army right there at their disposal.
Yep, and then following them, you have the Muslims. And within 100 years of Muhammad's death, Muslims conquered the area, and they defaced the Temple Mount by putting a shrine to Satan. The dome with a hoofy print, and then the mosque there, because, of course, Muhammad claimed that he had been there after riding the wild ass through the night. Of course, the little girl that he was molesting in his bed said, no, he never left the bed. I don't know. I was the victim of pedophilia. He was abusing me at the time. But she was about 9 years old at the time. Beyond the fact that she attests the fact that he never left his bed that night abusing her, and she was 9 years old and he was 53 at the time, you are still dealing with the fact that asses don't fly. And the temple did not exist in Jerusalem. It hadn't existed from 70 CE, and Muhammad was too stupid. He didn't recognize that fact, and Muslims are so stupid that when the Quran speaks of these things, they aren't smart enough to say, well, that was a lie. Why would I believe a book that lies to me like that?
When you're confronted, Yahweh talks so plainly. You write a lot more clearly than I do when I translate, but as far as what words mean and all, we're totally in sync on what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yet, when he speaks, when Yahweh is talking so plainly, why, and you confront somebody with it, because this has been almost to the point of depressing me when I talk to you. Personally, I mean, I love this show and what I get to participate in these two shows. But when I'm talking with somebody on a personal level, and they just go totally brain dead when confronted with these facts.
Yeah.
And when
it's hard, isn't it?
I just get where I don't want to tell anybody. I mean, I just go, why am I doing this? So they look at me with their eyes rolling, or they just don't want to have anything to do with me.
Well, look at Yosha. He had his one large public address.
Yeah.
I mean, he's lived for 33 years. It's only one large public address. Interesting, by the way, that it's only covered in the book written by the eyewitness, Matanyah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's three chapters of Matanyah, 5, 6, and 7. Only one, though. Everything else was he was walking along and, he was responding to somebody or he's talking with his disciples. Only one.
Yeah.
And almost every time that he's confronted by somebody making some question or statement, he'll put them down, really.
Yeah.
And his first response is, why would you ask me that? What does it say? I mean, you've read the book. What does it say in the Torah? And then when they just look at him stupid, he says, it says this. That's what it means. And I spoke clearly enough. And then after all of that, he just walks away from them, disappears. Because his experience, Kirk, is the same as yours, the same as mine. He didn't want to talk to him. He said it was a waste of time. He says, you know...
What is so hard to grasp?
He makes one large public address which says, do not think I'm here to found a new religion. Do not think that I'm here to do away with the Torah. Do not think that I'm here to replace it, to annul it. And I'm here to tell you that the wolf in sheep's clothing, whose name is going to be Lowly and Little, is going to claim that and create a religion based upon all these things. And then you're going to claim that you know me based on that religion. I'm going to say, I don't know you. Get away from me, all of you who are Torahless. That's his only one public address. Everything else, he said quietly to a small group and then walked away. Now, you've got to think, what is the reason for that? Because he only came to do one thing. To fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuot. That's all he came for.
Yeah.
He did those things. Yeah, did those things. I was prepared to do them in year 4000, 33 CE. Did them, and that was what he was here for.
I know it sounds, you know, I'm just mm-hmm. still frustrated by the whole thing. I have ups and downs like everybody else. I know it, but I'm just kind of sharing them out loud. But you, the verse you just read, mm-hmm. 21,
mm-hmm.
you've got a word in there, aman, and aman mm-hmm. also means not subject to change or revision, and it's talking about
right.
the source from which restoration, salvation flows. Jerusalem,
right.
the city,
right.
can only be that city. There's no other city.
Right.
Kuryah.
Well, Kuryah. What are the last?
These are not hard words to figure out, and anybody could read these things, and you'd say, well, wait a minute. This is an ongoing. We've talked about Olam a lot. You know, Olam says for always, my whatever, my mitzvah, my plan. My covenant relationship, you know.
Yeah, well, think about this for a moment. You just mentioned Kuryah. That was the word. That's my way. That's not the common word for city in Hebrew. The common word for city in Hebrew is Ur.
Yeah.
Okay? Y-R. This is Kuryah.
Yeah.
It is based on Kara, Q-A-R-A-H. So Q-R-H. And the H at the end of the word, all that does is make the word...
feminine, yeah.
Correct. So the basis of this word is the QR. QR is a place to meet, a place to reveal one's presence, a place to encounter one another.
Right.
It's QR, and then the last two letters, YH. It's a place to meet, yeah. It's a place for Yah to reveal himself. It's a place to encounter Yah. That's the name of this particular city.
And look at the letters. You've got a new day.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a man facing Yah.
All right.
Yah with his hand hanging down, holding down, reaching down, open-handed to lift mm-hmm. up someone, finishing with a feminine henna,
mm-hmm.
looking up, beholding. I mean, you can't get anything else out of it, and you know. I mean,
No. You're wrong.
No. Okay.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. And this is your area of expertise, so I'm going to challenge you on this one.
Okay.
Which way does the Rosh face?
Rosh is facing to Yah.
No. Isn't the Rosh? Isn't the Rosh facing?
The
I thought the Rosh face is the left.
Well, it's facing to the left, but the Y is after that.
No. The, well, let's see. What is that? The, oh, you're right. So that so I'm wrong. So it's the, while the R is, so I'm looking here in English. Yeah, the R is facing to the left. But the Yah follows the R. So the R is, in fact, facing Yah. That is correct. He's facing Yah.
So
no, you're, no, you're actually right.
The meeting Yah in the context of what Yah is meeting us for, to lift
right.
it up.
Right.
Pretty.
Yeah, in fact, you know, if you look at Torah, for example, the Rosh is facing the Hay, which is the one letter that's duplicated in Yahweh's name.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, any time the Rosh faces a letter in Yahweh's name, its implications, yeah, the implications are, as a rule, that it's positive. So this is the place to encounter Yah. But now they are murderers. And if you look at it, Jerusalem now, with particularly with this higher percentage of Muslims as there are in that city, and they're the most murderous people per capita in human history. It's a bad scene. And, of course, what's going to happen there over the next 15 years is going to be horrific. Now, next statement here, it takes some work to really understand. But his following statements suggest that the reason that they are, that the city of Jerusalem has gone from the place of vindication to the place of murderers, is the what is said here next. Your money and that which you yearn for, ath kesef, your metal coinage and that for which you long, have become impure and worthless dross, of no value, becoming refuse by backing away from that which is valuable. It's from the verb chug, which is to be repulsed, to hedge, and to turn away. And this is the part, that part's really straightforward. Although most people don't understand that kefesh means more than just money. It's what you yearn for. It's whatever your priorities are. So your money and that which you yearn for have become impure and worthless dross. Boy, if you talk about the coinage now in America, where America's currency is a debt instrument, a promissory note that's based entirely on debt. And how you couldn't have in a currency money less pure than the American currency. Yeah, the fiat currency of America has got to be the least pure, most worthless dross of any currency in human existence. And, of course, at this time, the Romans in particular, who had exclusive rights to the coinage. One, the coinage was really, and banking was really on trade, was all under the prowess of the Carthaginians, who were Phoenicians, actually, but the Carthaginians. But when Rome double-crossed the Carthaginians and then pummeled them, Rome had an exclusive on the coinage. And Rome, during this period, started to debase their coinage. They started to shave size, weight, and they went from 99% pure silver to about 80% silver. So the Romans were the first to inflate their currency by devaluing it. And, of course, man has made a habit of that ever since. It was part of the public works projects of some of the real stalwarts of morality and Rome, guys like Nero and
in particular,
he was really big at it. But so was the who was the sexual pervert
Caligula.
Caligula was in that period as well. Then it says your alcoholic drinks, and you might say, why would he talk about alcoholic drinks? And we'll talk about that in a moment. I'll get your opinion, and then we'll your alcoholic drinks are diluted in the sea. Well, the sea is Baha Mayim, which can also mean waters or with urine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why was alcohol important?
Well, to purify things.
Right. So if you're drinking in a city like Jerusalem, if you're drinking water that isn't brewed or distilled, and they'd had very little distilling at the time, so it was almost everything was brewed. It was either wine fermented or brewed distilled. Not distilled. When you're making, you're brewing, Bill, not distilling, but brewing with yeast. If you don't do that, the water will kill you.
Yeah.
Okay? So you have to drink alcoholic beverages. Now, today, we know that if we boil water, we can disinfect it, but they had no clue about that then. No clue. So no one boiled water to remove the pathogens. And so the only way to survive drinking anything in a city was to have it be alcoholic. Now, if you have an alcoholic beverage and it's diluted with water,
mm-hmm.
it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
It's going to kill you.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's part of it. So your alcoholic beverage, is that what you're, you know, you're brewing this to eliminate the pathogens, but then you're diluting what you're doing, and you're putting the polluted stuff right back into it. So, yes, right back into the system. So he is explaining from a scientific and medical point of view what they're doing to themselves. And, of course, alcoholic beverages, that which is intoxicating, which impairs judgment.
Your decision-making, sir.
Right. So,
we don't drink and drive.
Right, exactly. And so that's what it's representative of. It's you're affecting your ability to think.
Yeah.
And then also ma'am is the Hebrew word for pee, urine.
Yeah.
It's like you're peeing into your own cup. So there's a lot of subtleties that are being communicated here. Now I think that the vast preponderance of politicians are in politics. Hillary Clinton is the epitome, Bill Clinton were the epitome of this. I don't think anyone's ever worse, although George Bush that preceded them was almost as bad. And Obama is clearly as bad. I mean, George Bush was bankrupt multiple times prior to becoming president. The Clintons were bankrupt before becoming president, and Obama had never had a job in his life, and they all leave the Oval Office with tens, if not hundreds, of millions of dollars. So, if you think that they did things for any other reason than their own self enrichment, think again. God's not impressed. By the way, if God's saying, by the way, your money, and that which you desire is dross, it's impure, it's worthless. How does somebody get this notion that God wants you to give him money?
Yeah. Good thought. Great.
That's like saying,
that's so crappy. I won't give you
some of it. Yeah, you know, that bull patties out there in the field are really stink to high heaven, and they're really yucky. What I think you ought to do after I tell you that they're really crappy and yucky, why don't you share them? Why don't you bring them to me? Yeah, that's what I don't have. I don't have enough bull pies up here in heaven. All right, then it gets into your political and religious figures. Your political and religious officials. This is Sar Ath. Sar is your, Ath would be your leaders and high-ranking officers, your government rulers and wardens. That warden's kind of funny. Your nobility and overseers, your most influential merchants, and your contentious and adversarial lords. Wow.
That's another word. It's written really cool.
Yeah, I know. I love that. Yeah, isn't that written really cool?
And
absolutely.
When you do Sarar, you know, with the double faces,
right?
Then you get a double dose of it, just like when you repeat words. So.
Yeah. All right. In fact, well, the next word, you know, we have Sar, which is the sin, Rosh, and then we have the next word is Karar, which is written with the C and then the R and the R, but the C and the S are very similar in their sound. So he explains what he thinks of religious and political figures by the juxtaposition of Sar and Karar. So it's your leaders, your high-ranking officials, your government rulers and wardens, your nobility and overseers, your most influential merchants, and your contentious and adversarial lords, your political and religious officials, are defiant and obstinate in their rebellion. They're stubborn in their defiance.
Thieves.
Yeah, thieves. You know, that's why I spent all that time with Jerry Falwell, who in person, he just was really a lovely guy. He just treated people so outwardly wonderfully. And after I then met with Al-Qaeda and I came back and wrote Tea with Terrorists and was beginning my study of the Torah, because the Quran claims that it confirms the Torah, and what I was finding, it was the antithesis of it. And then I was beginning to find out how poor our English translations are, and I had that meeting with Jerry Falwell and said, man, you know, everything that you're preaching, your Christmas, your Easter, your Sunday worship, your God dying, you know, your Trinity, all that kind, every bit of it, your Jesus, your Christ, your unnamed God, all of it is just completely bogus. Your unwillingness to observe Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, Shabuah. And after, you know, 6 hours worth of meetings, I get, yeah, everything you said is true.
Yeah,
but if,
you're right.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, if we were to say it, we'd be broke. The people coming into our churches and sitting in the pews, which they only cared about because they tithed their money, and the checks that show up in the mail to support this university, would stop coming.
Yeah, and the negative would happen then would be what?
So you think we're going to tell the truth? No, it's exactly as God said. So your political and religious officials are defiant, obstinate in their rebellion, and they are closely associated with kidnappers, slave traders, and thieves. Every one of them desires a bribe.
Yeah, there's no out clause here, is there? There's no exception here, is there?
No, and chases after payoffs and rewards.
Right, bribes.
Right. I mean, if you're supporting Hillary Clinton in this next election, mm-hmm. and you are unaware that she and her husband are in politics for themselves, to enrich themselves, and you are clueless about the Clinton Foundation and how it's funded and what the money is used for, shame on you. You know, if you're unaware that your pastor is a smaller version of the Jerry Falwell, yeah, I do this, and I know I'm lying, but, you know, it's raise a lot of money doing it.
And we do good.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah, look at the people we're
here. 80%, 90%.
Build these marvelous churches.
Which you're on the hook for when he leaves.
So he says, your political and religious officials, they're scumbags. They're akin to kidnappers, slave traders, and thieves. Every one of them chases after payoffs and rewards. They do not bring justice to the fatherless child. And quarreling with the congregation of the bound, the dumb, and the forsaken is not pursued by them and does not even dawn on them. Now, there's no question that Yatzon is an orphan's child.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an orphan child searching without sufficient resources. So it's an orphan child who's searching, wants to know the truth, wants to find their father, but just doesn't have the resources to do so. That's what a yatzon is. And shafat is the Hebrew word for to decide, to judge.
Judgment.
Yeah, to bring justice is shafat. In fact, the Hebrew word, when they talk about the judges and the book of Judges, it's shafat. It's the basis of mishpat. It's somebody who can exercise good judgment based upon the evidence that is presented and render a moral, fair, and just decision.
Right.
Shafat. And so he's saying, and it's low shafat, so it's negated here, so they do not bring justice. They don't plead on behalf of. They don't adjudicate and provide the information that is necessary on behalf of that fatherless child who is orphaned and is searching without the proper resources.
Or as we were, they didn't give a damn whether you lost your soul or not.
Right. And, of course, the father... You're talking about here, the fatherless child?
Is the father in heaven.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this next part is rib. We know from the English, you know, if you're ribbing someone,
right.
you're poking fun at them. You're quarreling with them. And in the Hebrew word rib, its connotations are either wholly negative or they are positive only in the sense that you're acting in a way that is the antithesis of political correct. A ribber is a hater.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, though, the hate is righteous indignation. God wants us to be righteously indignant. God wants us to hate what he hates. And so he wants us to quarrel with. He wants us to choose to contend with. That's what rib means.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to bring a legal argument, a rational and logical argument against showing hostility and willful opposition to everything that man says you ought not do, that man said you ought to be a multicultural and accepting. Then that Jesus, the Muslim in St. Cloud goes and kills a bunch of people, and you have all the do-gooders say, we're just not going
to
let hate define us. We're not going
to
let hate define us.
Yeah, don't bring him to heaven.
Yeah, boy. We're not going to let hate define us, no.
No, he says harass him.
Yeah, that's what God says, quarrel with them. And the people he wants us to quarrel with? It's the congregation of the bound, the dumb, and the forsaken, the religious. We'll be back with you this evening and again next week.